Your Guardians outstanding. They have a 1-0 series lead in the ALDS against the Detroit Tigers. And to talk about them, we welcome in Matt Derry from the Derry Brothers Guardians cast. You hear it right here on 92.3, on the Odyssey app. And you hear him right here on 92.3 The Fan and 92.3thefan.com. Hello, Matt.
What's going on, fellas? How are you?
We're doing okay. Game one, it was such a wild beginning. The three-run home run by Lane Thomas in the first, all the way to the two-run double from David Fry. Just an outstanding performance altogether. Were you surprised by the offensive output?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you watch this team, and I know you guys have for the last few months, it's not exactly been an offensive juggernaut. Yet, for some odd reason, they were extremely aggressive with Tyler Holton, who, by the way, any time that the Guardians have taken on the Tigers, and Holton has been, you know, an opener, he's done really well. So this is an opportunity for this team to kind of get going, jump on him. I'd love when Reese Olsen came to the game and first pitch Lane Thomas got one right over the center of the plate. They know that the Tigers' game plan has always been, and this is one of the reasons why Detroit got into the playoffs, they want to control the strike zone. That's what they've been talking about since their general manager, Boy Wonder, Scott Harris, got hired a couple of years ago. We want to control the zone. Well, Olsen threw one right down the middle, and Thomas was aggressive with it. So it was a surprise. You love to see it. And now it sets up for a very interesting matchup tonight because of how good Tarik Skubal's been.
Boy, Matt, it seemed to me in the lead-up to the game, a lot of fans were nervous. There was anxiety. We went back to remembering losing eight straight playoff games, having issues in the closeout games, and knowing that Skubal was going in Game 2, it seemed to put a premium on how important Game 1 was. But it felt like right off the rip having Stephen Kwan come out there, and he was a big unknown. How would he do? How would he fare with his injury? He comes out and does what he does, and then the first inning, the rest is history. How important was the start to that game and changing really the entirety of the city's feelings about this team and their chances?
No, I agree, Anthony, and I'll say this too. I mean, Kwan's the key to everything. When Kwan was hurt the first time, they got very fortunate that guys like Tyler Freeman and others, I think, were a little bit over their skis in how they were playing. The second time around when Kwan was out, it wasn't the same offense. It just wasn't. And he sets the tone for everything. And if he's healthy, he's able to run down balls in the outfield and make plays, but he's getting on base, you know, his second at bat, I loved it. He drew the walk. And he wears other teams' pitchers down. And he sets the tone for the whole thing. So I love seeing a healthy Stephen Kwan. I love the fact that when other teams try to match lefties up against our team, which has happened earlier in the year, and the Guardians struggled. I think they've been better against lefties the second half of the year. But Kwan's a guy that lefties, righties, doesn't matter. He's going to hit anybody, and I think he's a pain in the ass to the other team.
Matt Derry, Derry Brothers Guardians cast, joining us here on the show. The bullpen, again, just an outstanding performance, as we've talked about it. Who do you think is the biggest cog in that bullpen there, Matt? Who's the most special one? Other than the closer, Emmanuel Clase, who's the most special setup guy?
I mean, Cade Smith is unhittable. And it was funny, when Bybee got taken out of the game the other day, people were questioning on the old Twitter app there, what are they doing? Why would they take him out? And I saw some Detroit people say, well, this could be our chance now. No, you're bringing Cade Smith into the game, and that's not C-A-D-E, that's K-apostrophe-D. He just pays everybody. I mean, he could be that Andrew Miller type, and I hate to go back to 2016 and dust off that old bit, but let's be honest, he could have that Miller type of impact, kind of the Alexio Gondo impact when the Rangers made it to the World Series years ago. It's the same type of thing. Cade Smith is special, and I think Vogt's going to use him a ton. I think in any game that's close, he's pitching.
Matt, when it comes to Skubal, what do you think is the best way to approach him? They've only faced him, what, once this year. It was a pretty decent outing. What do you do against him?
You mentioned it, Ken. That one outing against them, they kind of swung early. Skubal just attacks, man. He just throws strikes. He's the best pitcher in the American League, the best starting pitcher in the American League. He's going to win the Cy Young. And I watched him start against Houston in Game 1 the other day, when they beat the Astros, and all he did was just pump 95, 98 with that devastating changeup past you. And they got to lay off that low changeup. But I think the other thing that Stephen Vogt's going to do today I think you're going to see Tyler Freeman. I think you're going to see Austin Hedges. I think those guys are both going to play. Hedges has pretty decent numbers, and I know Austin Hedges isn't a hitter, but I think he's going to play, and I think you're going to see Freeman back from AAA in center field today. He's got decent numbers against Scooble, and that could be a little bit of a curveball that Stephen Vogt throws at you with a right-handed hitting guy that kind of sees Scooble pretty well. But the guy's special. But if the Guardians guy, Matthew Boyd, keeps him in the game and it's 0-0, 1-1, sixth or seventh inning, you like your chances with the Guardians bullpen right now, although the Tiger bullpen's been pretty good.
Do you have to take back any of the things you might have said about Lane Thomas earlier, or were you one of the ones that were holdouts for him?
Well, I mean, look, Todd and I on the podcast numerous times, yes, there were times we were saying it's more like Lame than M Thomas than Lane Thomas, but man, he's been great the last month. He finally seems comfortable. He's hitting righties and lefties, and he's playing with a little bit of a swagger. I'll say this, though. I think late in games they're going to have to move him to right field, maybe do a defensive substitution with Freeman in center because he scares me a little bit out in the outfield. He's got a great arm, but I don't think he's a great outfielder if that's one little small knock on him. But right now the way he's swinging the bat, I love that he's there right behind Naylor, and I think that's a good spot for him right now.
Where might Lane be in the lineup today against Scooble?
I think they're going to keep it pretty much the same, Anthony. I mean, I would still hit Fry second, and I would still hit Thomas fifth. I wouldn't change anything there. I just think Freeman's going to play instead of Noel, and I think Hedges will play instead of Bo Naylor. I mean, look, we always say Austin Hedges is kind of an automatic out at times. He handles the staff great. But Bo Naylor hasn't exactly been hitting all year, so I don't think it's that big of a drop-off. But I would venture to say Freeman would be in there tonight if I had to guess, and Austin would hit ninth.
Do you think – I think David Fry is really still battling something there. Do you feel the same thing other than what they've told us originally?
I mean, he hasn't caught 10 in months.
Mm-hmm.
So, to me, if his shoulder or elbow or whatever it is was healthy, he'd be catching. But he's not. So that – you know, when you're facing a right-hander, I mean, the other day they kind of knew it was going to be Holton, and then they guessed right. It was either going to be Hennepy or whatever, or Olson. So they went with Fry. Look, if Fry hits righties the way he's been hitting them the last week and a half, 2 weeks, then it's all right. You do want to make sure that Manzardo is getting some opportunities. But, yeah, I mean, Fry hasn't caught in months, so we're not going to see him do anything but DH and in an emergency play first base.
Because the reason I asked, you know, he's 2-for-3 on Saturday. You know, I said what happened in the sixth right as I brought you on. I think the proper credit needs to be given. I know that it's late in the season. It's a postseason. Everybody's battling something, but I think he's battling something significant there, and I think proper credit needs to be given to him.
No question. I mean, I think he's battled through it. He's not said a word about it. And I think that, look, he's hitting right now. And the fact that Stephen Vogt had him in that two-hole the other day, it's a vote of confidence. I know right after the All-Star break, he really went cold. I think he was tired. I mean, you're talking about traveling out to the All-Star game, being a part of those festivities, still battling that arm issue that he's had. Give the guy credit, though. I think this little time off helped him tremendously between the end of the season and round one here, round two.
Gavin Williams is speaking today. And as Owen has enlightened me earlier this morning, that usually means that he might be working game three. What would your process be for game three if you were managing the Guardians?
What would I do?
After a loss. So either way, with the pitching staff.
I would start Alex Cobb in game three, and I would have Gavin Williams ready to piggyback. Maybe Cobb goes three innings and maybe four, and then Williams is next. That would be what I would do. You got enough extra days where Bybee would come back for game four if there is one, and Boyd would come back for game five if there is one. But I would kind of, I mean, this is just my opinion. I have no inside info, but Alex Cobb is on the playoff roster for a reason. The guy has pitched in big games in the playoffs, including coming to Jacobs Progressive Field years ago and completely dominating the then Indians when the Rays beat us. So I'd go Cobb and Williams. That's interesting that Gavin is speaking. I don't know if this is some sort of game that Stephen Vogt is playing. We know the Guardians are they like to be tight-lipped about just about everything. So maybe they're playing a little game here. Who knows?
160 starts from Matthew Boyd when he was in Detroit. You're somebody who obviously knows him very well, and obviously Scooble knows him very well. There's been quite a lot about their history together, how close, how tight-knit they are. Obviously, that's not going to be the case today. It can't be so tight-knit as they're going to be battling against each other. What do you think of what Boyd could do today?
I really like the way that he's pitched, Anthony, since coming over here. I mean, you're off for almost a year and a half, and you don't really know what you're going to get out of this guy, but he's a complete professional. He's one of the best clubhouse guys you'll ever meet. Completely blended in with this team well, and he throws strikes. You know, so many times, like we talked about Gavin Williams before, who nibbles a little bit, has a little bit of wildness at times, but Gavin's going to be a special arm one day. But a guy like Matthew Boyd just knows how to pitch. And so when you're going up against a guy like Scooble today where runs will probably be at a premium, you want a guy like Boyd out there who just has been through it, has had his ups and downs. But I like that Boyd-Hedges combo today where those two guys are veterans that have been around, going to throw to each other. And he's been fantastic. And if you're the Tigers, and this is what they've been doing, this is why they've been winning, they throw monkey wrenches into the lineup all the time. You know, they had Carpenter, they had Keith, and they had McKinstry, all left-handed hitters in game one. Tonight, I bet you'll see Molloy. You'll see Ibanez, who, by the way, hits the ball very well at Progressive Field. Andy Ibanez does. And you'll probably see another right-handed bat in there as well. So they'll mix and match just like they've been doing. They've never had a lineup that's been really the same. They've called their whole thing pitching chaos. Well, they take a night off from pitching chaos tonight to go with Scooble, but then who knows for game three. I mean, this has been working for them, these weird lineups and this weird pitching stuff, and it's throwing other teams off. But let's see how the Guardians do first and foremost with Scooble tonight before we talk about game three.
Yeah, what's the leash on Boyd? He went 4 innings against St. Louis, you know, 2 1/3 against Minnesota, 4 1/3 against the White Sox. How many times does he have to go through the order today? How nervous are you going to be as we approach that second time around?
Well, I'm not that nervous, Anthony, because I mentioned it before by Kate Smith. I mean, if you get Boyd into the fourth or fifth, and it could be just like with Tanner Bibee. Now, I think Boyd will throw less pitches than Bibee. Tanner had a little bit of a high pitch count early in that game the other day. But if you get Boyd to the fifth and you're in the game and it's, like I said, 1-1, 2-0, 1-0, whatever it is, and you're right there, that's when you line up Smith, Aaron, Gattis, you know, Class A, and you go to work and you do your thing. I think more of Cade Smith will be the medicine that the Tigers do not want to take, because I just think he's that good.
Were you surprised that Ben Lively was left off the ALDS roster?
I wasn't, because like I said, I think they want to give Alex Cobb a shot and Gavin Williams ahead of Lively, but I think if you're the Guardians, you tell Ben Lively, you know, let's keep throwing on the side, because if you need him for the ALCS, he may be pitching a fourth game because there's not as many days in between with all the TV and everything else. So I'm not counting Ben Lively out for the season or saying they're forgetting about him. I just think they feel like, all right, short series. We know we can go Bibee and Boyd twice. And I think they're going to go, like I said, a piggyback of Cobb and Williams for game three. And then the guys in the bullpen, Walters and Sobrowski, have pitched so well that you don't have to move Lively to the pen. Those guys have been in their roles and know them. And you can hold Lively out for a round and bring him back if you want for the next round.
Matt, thank you very much for the time. I know you're en route, so we do appreciate the time that you could give us. And all the best to you, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
Fellas, anytime, you know that. Appreciate the plug of the pod, and let's keep winning. It's a lot of fun, isn't it?
It is. Matt Derry from the Derry Brothers Guardians cast on the Free Odyssey app. The plug in the pod. I like that name. Derry Brothers Guardians cast, which you can find on the Free Odyssey app. But he's on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Were you surprised that Ben Lively was left off the roster?
No.
The LDS roster?
No, not entirely.
I was a little bit, I got to tell you. I know they can't keep everybody, and usually a pitcher goes, but that was surprising to me.
I don't know. The Lively that we saw at the start of the year was so crucial, I think, to kind of holding things over, right? Biding time. And I think by the end of the year, it seemed like maybe Stephen Vogt wasn't really trusting him nearly as much. So it didn't entirely shock me. Now, in a seven-game series, the best of seven, which is what you'd have in the ALCS, mm-hmm. you know, I think obviously it'll be all hands on deck at that point.
Yeah, I mean, it would certainly be that way. I do agree with what he says. I think it's a really nice thing that what he's saying. I think a lot of people agree about the Alex Cobb slash Gavin Williams thing in Game 3, which you would bring out Alex Cobb. Going three innings, I'm not sure. I mean, we're talking about finger blisters and all this other stuff, but maybe you would bring out Alex Cobb for hopefully two innings, and then it would be Gavin Williams of some sort. Like, that would be something that goes, well, man, if they win this game today, it's going to be hard to keep it's going to be hard to keep the hopes down. Like, or, you know what I mean? Like,
the
expectations
for sure.
or the arrogance down of, I don't want to sit there and say the thing's going to be wrapped up. But, man, if they beat Tarik Skubal today, I mean, you're down 0-2 in that series. If you're Detroit, you can't get to them again until Game 5. You'd have to make a lot of things happen. That's got a lot of things are breaking your way then. I got a lot of people getting in. Well, let's see. There is a defense. Like, hey, let's see him with Nick Chubb. Are we kind of holding on to the strings there? What's left of him?
Well, of course. Of course.
Not what's left of Nick. I'm talking about, like, aren't we, like, I don't know if that's going to, is that going to help out? I mean, you have to be able to throw the ball eventually.
Yeah. Well, you're holding on for dear life because I said last week, like, the quickest way out of this and for the Browns to be good again was for Deshaun Watson to be good again. And maybe you're holding out hope that if he has the, you know, best running back in football, that an actual running game. They do need a running game. Like, they cannot run the football. And you're not going anywhere not being able to run the football. That is just a fact. I don't care who your quarterback is. Like, you have to be able to run the football to some extent. They were so laughably bad. When that game was somewhat competitive, which it wasn't, but until the end of the first half, they could not get anything in the running game. They ended up with over 100 yards, I think. That was all garbage. It was nothing in the scheme of things that they could rely on.
I don't even think the people who are saying that are wrong, though, because I think the Browns are going to do that, too. I think they're going to exhaust every single possible option they can until it's just clear to everybody. And I mean, not to the fans. I mean, everybody in the building, everywhere, that this is an untenable situation and it ain't going to work. And that's when they'll do it. I don't know if they're not. I don't think they're going to. I'd be shocked if I see it during a game. I mean, we've all made it out to be that he does not have Kevin Stefanski does not have the power to remove Deshaun Watson from a football game for poor play. Now, I assumed it was going to be that way because, again, once you open up that door, there's no going back. None. But if he did it, I'd be shocked. I just don't think he's going to do it. It's going to have to come to an abrupt end some way, somehow. There would be a case, I would find it more believable going down this road, that we would end a game, game's over, bad game, and then we'd find out on Wednesday that he ain't going to play, that it's going to be Jameis Winston, and you know what? He's just not feeling good. We're not even going to have him out there. Could you see that scenario?
Yeah, well,
And Dorian Thompson-Robinson's the backup.
Again,
that's where I would see that going.
Again, I thought that they could have benched Deshaun Watson and not call it a benching. They had the opportunity to do that in the third quarter and just say,
how do
you
do that
afterwards?
Though? How do you do that?
Oh, I just thought he could have said he was getting killed. We were trying to protect him. Things were going south in a hurry. We couldn't even get the plays in. We had to start from square one, and we thought it was a disservice to him and the team as a whole.
So can you tell him that he's more important than the other players like that? Because that's basically what you're telling everybody. I mean,
sure.
They're getting killed.
Look, there's no right answer here. There's no good, clean way to do this. I also couldn't believe that Deshaun didn't get knocked out of the game. Like, the hits he was taking were the hits a quarterback, like a rookie quarterback would take, or a college quarterback that has no business in a game, because he's not seeing anything. He has no awareness, the offensive line is bad.
Was it Jonathan Allen he got spun into on one of? Yeah, it was Jonathan Allen who I... Was it him or Dorrance Armstrong? He got hit so many times, I forget which one.
You had a
he
few different ones that stick out to me.
Somebody just tattooed him.
Yeah, he had one where the line just collapsed so bad that they drove whoever the running back was, at Foreman, I think at the time, they drove him right into Deshaun Watson. So that was a killer. That was a dead on arrival. Nobody could have done it. But maybe you could argue Deshaun could have audibled into something else. It wouldn't have mattered. The play was dead. Then there was the other one where he started trying to escape the pocket, looked like he had a chance on a third down to roll out. Then he spins around, pirouettes right into the arms of a Washington player who tackled him so hard that Greg Olsen's like, guys don't tackle like that anymore. Like, he just got so crushed on that play. I think Greg Olsen felt bad for him. So he's going to get killed. He was getting killed. I was surprised he was able to even continue in the game at that point.
Usually they try to at least lie to you, the broadcasters do, and act like there's a chance. Like they did not. There
no.
was no.
No, nothing. And then it started even nothing. Earlier. Remember, in the first quarter, he had scrambled out on the far sideline, and instead of just getting out of bounds real fast, he was kind of holding out hope that he could maybe make a move, there'd be a juke or something. And then he, right in his throwing shoulder, somebody, that rookie on Washington, teed off. Kenny teed off on
him. Oh, the kid from Sanderstill, the kid from Michigan, Mike Sanderstill.
Oh, my God. I go, is this going to be the kind of game it was? And, yes, it absolutely was that kind of a game.
216-474-0092. There's some people, well, you can't just blame the quarterback. No, we're blaming everybody. But, it just goes to show, right, I cannot hide away from it, guys, and I don't know how you could see it any differently. How does he do well with other quarterbacks, but he can't do well with this one? How is it? How is it possible? You tell me. How can they win football games and do all right? It's because they didn't have tape on Joe Flacco, a guy who's been in the league for 15 years? Is that it? They didn't have tape on him? And I'm one of the people who thought he was starting to turn into a pumpkin. Like, guys, there's just no more ways we can go about this anymore. And so I want to have a discussion on, well, when do you actually squeeze the trigger on that and remove him from football? But I know that they're not going to do that until they've exhausted every single option. So they'll wait for Nick Chubb, and they'll probably wait for somebody else that we don't even know about yet. And if he goes out there and he plays poorly, they'll try to wait even longer. Because if he's lost the fan base, and I do believe he's lost the fan base, they're still going to wait a few more steps before they lose the locker room. Now, Daryl can say what Daryl says. And Daryl believes that there's guys who have already turned on him. Okay. But they're going to exhaust everything until they finally make that change. But how is it that they're able to move the football with other guys? Can't do with him. And by the way, I do not think that Jameis Winston is going to come in and have some Joe Flacco run.
No, I don't either.
Jacoby Brissett was a passable, fine enough quarterback, and they were 4-7 when Deshaun Watson took over in 2022. That was their record. They won that game at home against Tampa Bay and Tom Brady, and then that was it, and Deshaun Watson took over. They were 4-7. And again, they didn't bring back Brissett because they know what the fans think of the guy, and they know that the majority of the fans are no longer down with it. And people keep calling it an experiment. It's not. It's the way things are. This is a full-throated, all-the-way-in investment that has just gone terribly, terribly for them. And if they go in the other direction, meaning that they sit him and they do, it's going to take a while for this to get on track. And it's probably going to be with other people who come in here to try to get this thing on track. And I just don't want to go through the same rigmarole we had gone through up until that. Like, part of this is, like, I've become very comfortable with Andrew Berry at general manager and Kevin Stefanski at head coach. But damn it, we got 12 more games left to go in this season. They all need to be examined, every single one. The veterans need to be examined, whether or not they're going to be here at the end of the month. Because you're 1-4. And everybody outside of Cleveland thought you weren't going to do well. Why is that? They didn't blame your head coach. They didn't think your head coach was sucking up the room, did they? I don't think they did.
I mean, Kevin has a good reputation.
I can't find anybody outside of Cleveland to say anything bad about Kevin Stefanski as a play caller, as a coach.
That is true. That is 100% true.
I can't find one single person. So it's the same old story that fans get mad at their head coach over time, and they believe that he ain't the right guy. Okay, we've had that discussion a million times. We'll have it a million times more. Because, again, I always like to say that about head coaches. What do outsiders think of your coach? If they think he's a boob, then maybe you're true in your boobery. But if they have no emotions tied to it, and they just look at it from their afar setting, and they think your coach isn't the problem, maybe your coach isn't the problem. Maybe the general manager is the problem. Maybe the general manager is the right guy, the coach is the problem. Maybe the quarterback's the problem. Maybe it's the talent that was picked, which means the general manager is the problem and the players are the problem.
Yeah, but
which
everybody
one would it be?
But everybody before the season said there's plenty of talent here, right?
Then why are they 1-4?
Yeah, I mean, they couldn't even get plays in. There were multiple times it wasn't just the play that on fourth down, Deshaun Watson walks off the field and we're wondering what happened there. There was a play three plays prior where, again, they had too many men on the field. So this was not something happening last year. What has happened to their game day operations. What has happened? It happened on defense, too. Because they had too many guys on the field on defense yesterday multiple times.
You're trying to fix something that probably was more than likely not broken. I would imagine that this offense, that story that was told about, well, Deshaun Watson saw the Kevin Stefanski offense. Okay, then why did you let go of people and you brought in Ken Dorsey to do this?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt.
Why is that? Is that story something that we no longer tell anymore?
Well, there's no doubt.
Because it wasn't the right story to begin with?
There's no doubt at a higher level, like this week, they have a bunch of things to talk about. One of them is Kevin and Ken Dorsey and maybe Deshaun, I don't know, need to get in a room and they need to explain how they had so many issues lining up yesterday. That has to get fixed. It didn't happen last year with Joe Flacco down the stretch. It didn't. It flat out didn't. So who's responsible for it? Because when it was Stefanski, Van Pelt, and Flacco, all the plays came in on time, no problem. There were audibles at the line of scrimmage. There was a quarterback making reads, being able to hit guys. Yes, they had more time to throw last year, but they also had a running game. You had a quarterback under center. He could turn his back to the defense. He could read a defense. He could get off his first read, and everything looked professional. They need to explain where it went wrong, because if they don't have an answer for why it went wrong, then it's going to continue to go wrong. And again, everybody is losing their job in that scenario.
I'm sorry, real quick. Are you saying they need to explain it to us, or they need to explain it to each other and to themselves and to the front office,
and I would imagine
ownership and everybody?
Who is Kevin Stefanski's boss?
It would be, I would imagine, Paul DiBodesta,
you think it's
the ownership.
You think it's Paul? Paul is his boss?
He's the chief strategy officer, is he not?
What does that mean?
I don't know. I'm just guessing, to be honest with you. I don't know what he does.
I'm not condemning you at all. We're right back to where we were 8 years ago, 9 years ago with Paul DiPodesta. What does that mean?
Well, because then if there is any ambiguity,
mean he's in charge?
If there's any ambiguity whatsoever, then the guys have to report to Haslam straight up.
Yes.
And do you think Jimmy Haslam is going to be in the building today demanding answers from those guys? I'm not saying that that's not the case. Jimmy lives in Cleveland now. I mean, he's up here. He's up here almost every day. So people
see
him.
How's the internet connection in San Diego?
Well, that's the thing. I just don't know Paul or whoever, but at some point, when you're this bad and you look like the worst team in football, and it looks like you have one of the worst quarterbacks in football, you have the worst running games in football, one of the worst offensive lines in football, you have a defense now that is underperforming, you have no faith, guys' body language is in the crapper, you still have another road game before these guys come home, they're getting booed
in
every home game.
In Philly, of all places, you're in Philly.
Yeah, you're in Philly. You don't think Jimmy Haslam is in that building today demanding answers? If he's
would you
not,
be?
It, yeah, I kind of think he...
Then you'd have to imagine he would
be,
right?
So how do they answer those questions, and how much more runway do they even have to continue going through this? Because we know how ownership has reacted in situations like these in the past.
So yesterday I got a very upsetting text. I didn't feel like it was proper to put something out on social media at that time because I knew it would get caught in the wash, especially how the game went yesterday. Felt it was appropriate now. It's a shame, but... He wouldn't want it to be like this. He wouldn't want it to be sad, but we lost Dan Coughlin Sunday morning, and he's a man who he wouldn't want us to be sad. I know he wouldn't want us to be sad. He was always very self-deprecating and very honest about his mortality. As he reached an advanced age. I met Dan for the first time when he was turning 80 years old. And I got to know him over the last 6 years. I saw how he was when his wife Maddie passed away. I met his family. He's got great kids. He's got great grandchildren. His grandson Danny, who has been his helper up until this point this year, was fantastic. Just a fine young man. He's just left a fine family, and it was tough to read that yesterday. And it's tough for a lot of reasons because Lima was a intern for Danny Coughlin. What years were those?
2003. Yeah.
So Lima was an intern for Danny Coughlin. I think he retired in 2008, if I'm not mistaken. You were an intern for him. I got to know him little by little over the last 6 years. He is one of the greatest storytellers we've ever had in this area. And Lima likes the history of the city. I love the history of the city. We have lost one of the people that tell you stories that you're just never going to get anymore. You're never going to get the, we don't have the access in media anymore.
People don't want to get canceled for telling stories.
No, they don't. And
with as colorful language as they do.
I'm sure there's going to be people say, well, that's on, you know, what you guys, whatever, this and the other. It's not even about that. You know, and maybe it's blamed right on us. Okay, fine. That's different. We don't have the access. We don't do the travel. It's not what it used to be. There have been people who've broken the trust, I think, between player and journalist, and Danny was never one of those guys. And what we got out of it was a wealth of stories of Cleveland of yesteryear that we'll never be able to recreate because of the times and how they've changed. And I am serious about this. I thank God that he has so many stories that are recorded, whether in print, audio, TV, YouTube, whatever it is, because Danny's one of the people that's told the story of the history of the city better than anybody else I've heard. We got the pleasure of having Danny join us in studio earlier this summer to celebrate the anniversary, the 50th anniversary of 10 Cent Beer Night. And we asked Danny to tell us one of those stories. It started with Billy Martin.
Do you believe that Billy Martin may have sent his team out there with bats knowing that this was going to cause a forfeit?
Well, believe it or not, Carl Fazio, the Indians' promotion director, believes that. And that was the first time I'd heard that theory.
Do you believe it? I mean, no, he was a surly guy, Billy Martin was.
Yeah. No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Hell, it would be tough to say I'm going to create a forfeit situation. That's stretching it.
Dan Coughlin joining us here on the show, Fox 8 News.
That's worse than saying they stole the election from me.
Well, no. Put the safety back on.
Coming
for a second, Danny, please. Danny Coughlin from Fox 8, the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Now, you went down and started talking to the kids down there. Is that not true?
Okay, long after the game.
Yeah, tell us about this.
They cleared everybody out. There were still about 10 teenage-type kids standing on top of the Rangers' dugout, chanting for them to come out and fight. But anyway, with my reporter's notebook, it says on the cover, reporter's notebook, showing that clearly, hopped up on top of the Rangers' dugout and asked them what they were trying to prove, because I said, the Rangers are gone. And a kid, without saying a word, reached from behind another kid and punched me right in the jaw.
Did you see the kid? Who hit you?
No, I don't know. But I didn't even feel it. The kid had nothing behind his punch.
They've been drinking all day.
Yeah. Bad footwork.
That's Danny Coughlin with us back in June. No, Lima, you were his intern in 2003. What was he like for you?
Yeah, I'll never forget, because lowly interns, to have somebody at that point who was as big in the city as he was on the very first day say, hey, Tony, we're going to be over there by the marina. Come on out. You can come. I go, really? And, like, I had to make phone calls to make sure I was even allowed. That was how cool he was to really welcome you into the family. I think I had to bring him his pants, quite literally, to Burke Lakefront for the race.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, I'm like, that's what interns do?
Yep.
Yes, that's what interns do. And it had a great story about it. And there's certain guys, we just get out of the way. Just let them tell their stories. You don't have to butt in. It's not about you. And like Michael Stanley was one of them when he was here. Always was sure to like absorb every single thing that came out of Michael's mouth. That was the other one. He came in. What was the date?
That was June 3rd of this year.
When he came in, June. And he, again, advanced age, but wasn't slowing down in energy, wasn't slowing down in laughter. We all just sat there and laughed. And it was legitimate laughter over stories I've heard him tell 10 times.
Because he had a different spin to it every time.
You might get a different story every single time.
And he just told stories about people you never thought you would hear about him, and the people were fine to have him tell those stories. And he, again, just the talent that he had to bring stories to life. I'd have him laugh as I walked by, because I go, Dan Coughlin, News Center, 8 in Berea, because that was always a sign-off when he was doing Brown stories. I know that his family, they're wonderful people. Nick Kovach, who was his producer for a very long time, I was texting with him yesterday. It's a blessing that we had Danny and his wits about him those 86 years, and right up until the very end.
An awesome
Sunday
guy.
Morning.
And you know what? I know everybody made the joke on social media yesterday. Dan wasn't going to sit and watch this anymore. Reality is, he got his Eds win over the weekend, and I think that was good for Danny. So What a legendary career. Yeah. Legendary.
If you want to do yourself a service, go find one of his books. Go find anything on YouTube of him telling stories. You're going to get a true education of this city. So we will miss Danny very, very much.